really wonderful opportunity for me, and I am sure a wonderful opportunity for all of us to be able to get together here today and to just flow in the reflection of that which we have conceived and built consciously in the past. All of you, to my knowledge, have been exposed to these laws on the Christian Science level of the Chart of Being before. For those of you who haven't, I know that you were directed here today for purpose, and you are not going to feel outside of the flow of what's happening in consciousness. When listening for what would be a right approach and a right focus for today, I heard very strongly that these laws had been presented by Max and by Joel brilliantly, effectively, and are available for all of you to hear, to listen to appreciate, and to study when you're so impelled. Many of you have been, were in the 1973 seminar when Max actually presented the laws of being. And so therefore, I felt that the right focus today was one of tonality building rather than concept building. And what I thought we could do together today would be to reflect upon each of the four laws on the Christian Science level and just let them speak to us in their own way. Just allow the flow of spirit, allow the focus of spirit to focus us and to sing its song, to just kind of well up from within us. It's that wonderful tone of spirit where it's just your heart. It just kind of comes from within and just wells up and explains itself, but in a very strong sense of tonality, with just a flow from within. That is the reason why I took all of your notes for you, and why you have in front of you each law and all of the boxes, the intersects of the various columns and rows filled in, so that you don't feel the need to sit down and make sure that you have the right word in the right box to fill the right space, but can be confident with all of us that the information is already there, that it has presented itself to you before and again now in a very clear way, and that all you need to do is come out from that structure with me today and flow through the laws. All of us today are sitting here in a position of the humanly subjective standpoint of the word order, of the law of creativity. We're sitting here all seeking to know, all seeking God, turning to our highest sense of being, our highest sense of mind. We cannot help but be where we are. We cannot help but turn to that mind, because that mind is what it is. That mind is declaring itself to us, to the human. It is revealing itself to us, to the human, to that which appears as the human. And so it is only in response to that declaration that we find ourselves turning. It's a wonderful thing to see things in structure. It's a wonderful thing to be aware of what is causing me to turn, what is causing me to seek. Otherwise, I might falsely conceive it and think that it's a mental activity within my own personalized little tiny self that I have decided that I must find out about God or that I must conceive God in some way. But it isn't that. It really isn't. It's the opposite. It's because that God is. It's because that being is. It's because that mind is declaring itself to itself and to what appears to be the human that we are impelled to turn, that we are impelled to seek that mind. And so as we turn and as we listen, as we search out what is that mind, we can hear the declaration of that mind saying, I am mind, right? I am the divine, all-knowing, all-hearing, all-seeing intelligence. I objectify as intelligence. And that intelligence, as I turn, as I see, as I comprehend, as I am able to catch the vision of that intelligence of mind, it appears on me objectively as wisdom, as having a better conception of that all-knowing, all-seeing, all-hearing intelligence. And so, in that chart that you have in front of you, you have those exact place values right there, the divinely subjective I am stating to itself, I am mind, and stating simultaneously just by the law of opposites, therefore I can't be anything else. I must be mind. I can never be, therefore, a mortal mind. I can never be anything but that which I am. And in that divinely objective column you see there, that I objectify as intelligence. And then with that marvelous little Christ translation in there, you can find the impact on the human understanding, the human condition. And in the humanly objective column, you'll see wisdom. In the humanly subjective column, the wonderful response that we have to the call, the declaration, the revelation of mind, our ability to turn to it, to seek, to ask. As we flow, as we seek, as we find, and we are wise, or we become wise, what's really happening is that degree by degree, the false concepts about that mind, the false concepts about that God are just falling away. We perceive that as an annihilation of ignorance. So it should be very easy for you then to follow the flow of the law as it structures itself from what it is to what it appears as in our experience. I may not always identify it for you the rest of the day as clearly as I'm doing now, but I'm doing this so that you can follow with ease the flow across the chart and see where this flow is coming from. We are here, we are turning, we are seeking, that mind is declaring, but that mind isn't just mind. That mind is spirit. It is a spiritual mind. That intelligence is spirit. It can never be material. It isn't material. That spirit is saying to itself, I am spirit. It is declaring to itself that it is spirit. And it is revealing itself as spirit, as substance, because it objectifies as substance. So it says that all-knowing, all-seeing, all-hearing intelligence of mind, that's the only substance that there is. There isn't any other substance. It's just making a clear declarative statement. And there isn't any other substance. There isn't a material substance. As I've been turning, as I've been seeking, as I've been finding the ideas of mind, the clarification of mind, spirit too has had its impact upon my experience in that it enables me subjectively to choose just the spiritual, to choose that which is of spirit, to choose the substance of spirit, therefore allowing that I not choose the material substance, that I not focus materially, that I not misinterpret the intelligence of mind and believe that that intelligence is a material intelligence, but understand, no, that intelligence, that mind is spirit. Therefore, it is declaring to me that it is the only substance. It is a spiritual substance, and that substance is my substance. Therefore, that substance enables me to be that which it is, and it objectively appears in my experience as a sense of purity, as the fact that I am pure. What does that really mean? It only means that I see that that is my only substance, that I focus purely on the ideas of the intelligence of mind, that I don't focus anywhere else, that I don't see dualistically. If I were to see dualistically, then I would be where in the column that is eventually annihilated by spirit, the column that says dualism. But you see, that can't stay, that can't exist in reality, because spirit is declaring, I am the only spirit. I am the only substance. And that is objectifying in the experience of what appears to be the human as purity, as being the only substance of my being. And that I have been enabled to choose my focus, to choose the spiritual ideas as my reality, as my substance. But that's not all there is. Being is marvelous. It says, oh, I'm not just mind and just spirit. I am soul. You can just, it's like a tone that runs through. You can just hear this mighty, I am soul. It's just declaring itself as soul. It is saying, I am identity. That everything that has been seen in spirit, that all of those ideas that have come forth from the intelligence of mind, that are spiritual ideas, have absolute crystal clear identity. And that clear identity has an impact upon the human experience. That clear identity I feel subjectively as my identity. And as I start to feel the one infinite identity of soul, it enables me bit by bit to abnegate my false sense of identity, my little I identity, my little ego of identity. But it isn't that I choose even to do that. It's because soul is the one infinite identity that, and because of the Christ impact, it is being impacted upon my experience, and I really have no choice. I just must let go of any false sense of self, any false sense of identity that I'm holding on to, any materialistic identity that might have been based on mortal mind, that might have been based on mysticism or magic or astrology, any of the false concepts of mind materialized in spirit and seen and solidified and improperly viewed in soul through the sense testimony rather than through that which appears when I identify correctly spiritual sense or spiritual understanding. So I am that spiritual sense. I don't even have to seek it. I really have that spiritual sense because I'm not outside of soul, and because soul is making its declaration very, very clear. Soul, in its saying that I am soul, I am the one infinite identity, I therefore objectify in your experience as your own spiritual identification, as your own spiritual understanding, as that clear, crystallized focus that you are. And that is a wonderful feeling within of being selfless. And as I'm identified in a crystal clear way and without self, I have ceased to miss the mark. Therefore, I have banished what is called sin, only to miss the mark, to see through the guise and the false modes of the five physical senses. The only thing that happens in the disappearance of sin is that the basis of everything is changed. Instead of being based in mortal mind, I have found my true basis in mind. Instead of being falsely based in materiality, I have found my true base in spirit. Instead of being falsely based and gearing my viewpoint from the five physical senses, I have been truly based in soul. Therefore, I have, at that point, no sense of missing the mark, no sense of sin. I feel it's very important to take that term out of the religious concept, because there seems to be a collective and universal belief about paying penance, a lot of penance, whether it's in the Christian, you know, the Judeo-Christian religions of having to pay penance and repent for one's sins, or whether it's one of the Eastern philosophies where you're in a belief of karma. It's still the same ultimate false concept of having to pay the uttermost farthing for having not been correct. But sin, or missing the mark, truly existed before the advent of man. All of us really must be free from the false concept that we have to accept ourselves as sinful man looking back to his sinless state and understand that No, it's very simple. I'm focused, I'm not focused. I'm coming out from mind, coming out from spirit, coming out from soul, or I'm not. If I feel I'm missing the mark, I go back to the mark of mind, the mark of spirit, the mark of soul. It's really easy. But to clunk myself on the head and make myself pay a lot of prices is unnecessary, it's wasteful, and it doesn't do the job. Oh, you can suffer forever, you know, but it really doesn't do the job. Unless that horrible, abject suffering finally convinces you to turn to mind. If it does that, I guess it's been worth it, I don't know. But I find, certainly in the classes that we have in San Diego, and I find just in just acknowledging what appears to be human experience, that seems to be quite a false claim that we all have to handle, that we have to punish ourselves continually for not being right on the beam. But in reality, you are on the beam, and you're going to have to accept the mind of you, the spirit of you, the soul of you eventually, so why not now, right? Just be really objective about the whole thing, non-emotional. Can you hear soul in there, right? The opposite of soul, of course, is ecstasy and emotion and all of that. So you have to, if you're really abnegating self there, you will not have all of that negative emotion creeping in. And you can very quietly, carefully say, oh, it's very simple. I'm off the mark. I'm going to go back to mind, back to spirit, back to soul, because they are declaring what they are, and I'm going to turn and listen and seek and find what they are. And as I see what they are, I'm going to focus on what they are, and I'm going to identify with that focus. That brings us to principle, which is saying, great big tones, right? I am principle. I am the one and only principle. There is no other principle. There is no person. There is no theory or collection of theories or collection of little principles outside of the one principle. Says no. I am the one infinite principle. That principle, remember, is not outside of the soul and the spirit and the mind that we've just flowed. It's just a bigger dimension. It's giving you a bigger view of mind and spirit and soul. And it's saying, you know, that is the creative principle, and there's only one principle. And I am it, you know, not you. I am it. I am the one infinite principle. And as I allow that, as I'm, you know, turning and subjectively experiencing that principle, what it does within is it forces me to be obedient to that principle. And I can't tell you what a joy that is. I know that you all have touched it, and I know that you all know, but I just feel just overjoyed with that particular experience. And if I can share that, I would love to, because of recent times, more than before, I have really felt that obedience principle where one is just abdicated enough in soul to allow that principle to work, to operate me, to operate as me, and to do whatever it says, you know, but at this point, just to obey, to turn to that one infinite principle, to acknowledge that it is the only principle, that there isn't another principle, that it is the one principle, and because it is the one principle, I must obey that principle. And as I do, it becomes a governing power in my experience. It is the governor. It does the work. Therefore, in my experience, it appears as spiritual power. It is. It's absolutely incredible power. If I take that personally, I've really got a problem, because it isn't a personal power. And it's at this point that if you haven't built correctly in the stages from mind to spirit to soul, if you haven't heard the full declaration, if you've just kind of heard, the principle, but you haven't known what you were hearing, you might get it confused and think that it was your own personal power, your own personal governing power that was setting something into action, that was accomplishing a particular purpose. But it isn't. It's a divine, infinite principle that is at work here. and that is accomplishing its purpose as me, as you. And you're not outside of it. I'm not outside of it. So we must just, as we abnegate self, we thereby, in principle, abnegate person, our own belief of ourselves as a person, thereby enabling that divine infinite principle to be at work in our lives, in our experience. And it is a governing power, and it does govern, and it governs rightly, and it governs justly, and it brings things to pass that one would never conceive humanly, that one could never think would come to pass. It has a self-organizing capability, so it organizes your entire experience. It organizes your life. It organizes what appears as your thinking. It organizes everything. It just, all of a sudden, you just feel a push, a surge, something just takes over, and it operates you. It operates me. And yet that operation is not outside of the principle, so it's always a harmonious operation. When that's governing in my experience, it governs harmoniously. If you find something not governing harmoniously, you can bet there's a little person in there doing a little deciding how it's going to govern. Even as high a thing as you choosing what law you're going to do today, you know? You say, oh, well, that's a very principled thing to do. You know, today I've decided I'm going to study all about the law of creativity. Or tomorrow I'm going to do the law of transformation. And first I'm going to start with this, and then I'm going to start with that. That sounds pretty good, right? Sounds okay. But it isn't. Because maybe it isn't in the interest of the harmony within principle for you to focus in that place right now. So if the person is choosing where to focus, you got to go right back up. You can find your place on the map here and say, uh-oh, you know, choosing the spiritual. Whoops, that's spirit. Okay, well, backtrack, right? So I'm not clear in spirit. I got to go back, you know, pull myself together here and get focused. Because if I don't, then there's no way in principle that I am going to be able to be obedient to principle, because I won't even hear it. I'll hear some kind of dualistic, you know, haven't you said, well, I really want to be obedient, but I have one voice telling me to do this and one voice telling me to do that, right? Maybe you haven't experienced that, but I have. And I know what that's like. You say, but which one is principle's voice and which one is mine? You know, I don't really know. Okay, so that's not a bad thing. As long as you're able, with the beauty of structure, to take your little road map here and go back and say, aha, I am not focused in spirit. I'm going to refocus here. Understand that I'm focused on the ideas of mind. I am going to abnegate self enough so that that spiritual understanding is that which is in full focus. And with that spiritual understanding, I can't miss but hear the voice of principle. There's no way. You will hear. And it will be very definite. Because in soul you have definiteness. You have crystal clearness. Made up a word, right? And therefore, I can't help but identify the voice of principle when I hear it. And then, of course, my choice in principle is to obey. Not always easy. It isn't. It isn't. You know, you say, okay, I hear, but I don't want to do that. You know, I just don't want to. And it says, okay, don't. Don't. It's all right. 2 weeks later, I wish I had done that. It was really the thing to do. But somewhere in there, you didn't have enough faith, enough allowing of principle to govern in your experience to obey. But as we do obey, as we do focus on and cleave to the one infinite principle, and we see that it's a principle, and we see that it's a governing principle, and that it's our governing principle, that has just got to wipe out our personal views of God, our personal views of principle. It has got to wipe out within me that I have to obey person. Oh, think about that. That's really a big one. That I have to obey person, that I have to obey the church, that I have to obey any kind of religious authority, that I have to obey any of the sciences, the science of economics or the science of medicine or the science of anything. Do I have to obey that? I have to obey the one infinite principle that is a creative principle built on mind, spirit, and soul. So if you find yourself at an impasse where something appears to be demanding that you do something, or that you cleave to a certain way of doing something, check your roadmap, go back to mind, go from mind to spirit to soul to principle, follow all those stages, divine and human, and obey. Then you'll know. I mean, nobody could tell you ahead of time. Nobody else can tell you anyway. But you will know securely within what is right for you and what is principle's desire to be worked out in your experience at that moment. And there will be no choice. Sometimes it may appear that you are obeying that which someone has asked you to do. But at that point, they were, in fact, just a representative of the voice of principle. It's just that maybe we weren't sure, or maybe we didn't identify it properly. But if I'm really listening with spiritual understanding and soul, I will be able to identify that properly. And I will know that it is principle speaking, and that principle is at work, and that that is what I'm obeying. Ah, now we come to life. Wonderful life in there saying, and I am not only principle, I am life. I am the one life, the one infinite individuality of life. I am the eternality of life. You know what it's really saying? It's just saying, you know that wonderful omniactive principle that's at work, at work, at work? Yes. It's at work in the great infinite individuality. It's at work eternally. It never stops. It never starts. It's just at work. It's always at work. That's eternality. It's very simple. Principle is governing. It's working. It's working. It's always working. It doesn't stop. Doesn't take a vacation. Doesn't do anything. It's working. And as it works, it's continually bringing forth unique calculations, new calculations. It's continually bringing forth new views of itself, new workings of itself. Now, how do I feel that in my experience? Well, I feel it as a sense of love, love with a small L. That sense of love really just stands for the fact that I allow the workings of principle in my experience. Therefore, I am experiencing life's individuality. Life in the divine is experiencing its own individuality, its own expressiveness, its own uniqueness. And in the human, as I allow that, therefore I experience the uniqueness, the individuality of life's experience. Not as having my own little mortal life, doing my own thing, so to speak, but I am totally within the government, the operation, the relationships that exist within principle. Can you hear the feedback to principle? You see, if you were not in principle, principle is all of the relationships, right? Principle is structure. Principle is all of the facts in relationship with one another, governed by the whole. I am therefore in that wonderful state of love where I am experiencing life's individuality. We were just going into structure before we stopped the tape, and that structure, all of those ideas in relationship, governed and dominated by the character of the whole. What is the whole? Principle. It's dominated by the character of principle. Therefore, if I have been obedient to that principle, if I have let it operate and govern in my experience, then I am experiencing all of the wonderful directions of that governing principle. I am allowing it to calculate and recalculate in my experience. I am allowing it to bring forth my experience for me. Therefore, subjectively, of course, I must be laying down my mortal sense of life. I must be laying down my mortal individuality. I am laying down that I run my own little life. But, as you see, you really have no choice, nor would you wish to anyway, because that divine infinite principle is operating. It is doing the work. And there isn't really anything more joyful than allowing it to do the work. In the first place, if we allow it to do the work, and we don't have a sense of self in there, we don't have a sense of person in there, then it's marvelous. It does the whole thing. I don't have to do it. I don't have to feel that I'm overburdened, that I'm overworked, that I'm overtaxed, that I have done anything, that I have sacrificed anything, that I have been operating. No. I just am constantly aware of the fact that that principle is my principle, that that government of principle is the government of my being. It is declaring itself as such. It is stating itself as such. It is revealing itself to me as such. And as I acknowledge that it is that way, then it's easy. I just abdicate. I just let go of my control over my life experience. I just say, okay, you do it. You're going to do it much better than I would anyway, because you know everything beforehand, and it does. Principle, everything is fixed in principle. So principle knows everything, knows all the ideas, knows the end before the beginning, knows everything. So how it's easy, just lay down that mortal sense of life. It isn't a hard thing. People look at that. I've heard, you know, the comment for years, oh, that's too, I can't lay down that. I don't know how to lay down that. That's rough, you know, lay down the mortal sense of life. And they feel a sense of, you know, crucifixion and being, you know, cut up, and a religious sense, in other words, of laying down the mortal. It isn't religious. It's very scientific. If that principle is going to be allowed to operate and to do its work effectively, you don't want to jam it up. You don't want to get in the way with any false sense of individuality, with any false sense of life. Obviously, we want to just let it operate. And so, if in principle I have been obedient to what principle has told me to do, then in life I'm responding by doing it. You know, I'm doing it. I'm going to do what it tells me to do. It's really simple. I just do it. And as I do it, as I am not only obedient, but I actually do it, it wipes out that the little I is doing it. You see, if I think that I am in charge of my mortal life and that I have to do it and I'm taking responsibility, I also can fall into the false belief that I have a pride in what I'm doing, you know. Yay for me, you know, I've done that and I've built this, or I've done that, or I've done something else. Whether it was principle directed or it wasn't principle directed, it can't be that way. In this stage of life, we have to say, no, no, I'm not outside of principle. That principle is only operating as me. Therefore, it is operating in my experience. I'm allowing it. I'm doing it. I'm just doing what it tells me to do. But I'm not separate from that principle. I don't take separate responsibility or pride in it. Nothing. I just do. I just am the operation of that principle. I'm just doing that which I'm the expression, the individuality, the uniqueness of that principle, and I'm just operating, I'm just doing it. It's really simple. And then that wonderful truth comes along and it says, yes, you know, I'm not just life. I'm not just mind, which is spirit, which is soul, which is principle, which is life. I am truth. I am the one infinite consciousness. I am the only consciousness. I am the consciousness of everything that I am, of every operation that I am, of every unique expression that I am. I am the consciousness of that life operation. I am the consciousness of all that being is. Therefore, I'm never in error. There isn't a facet of my being that is in error. I am the total affirmative facts of being. Every calculation that has come forth in principle, that has uniquely been brought forth and experienced in life, I'm it. I am the end result, the totality of it, the wholeness of it, the form of it. I'm it. Every idea that has ever been conceived by mind, that is the only idea in spirit, that is a crystallized, clear, identified concept in soul, that has found structure and science and system and principle, that has found individuality and life, isness in life, has form, has absolute, clear, ideational form, is a compound form. And I'm it. I, truth, am it. And that very statement, that declaration in being, has its effect in the human experience as a sense of health, as a sense of wholeness. So therefore, if we want health, if we want wholeness, go to the roadmap here. What do I have to do? I go backwards, right? I feed back to truth. I must know that if I don't seem to exemplify health in my experience, I don't just mean physical health, mental health, health of relationships, health, health, health of any kind. It doesn't make any difference. If that doesn't seem to be appearing in my experience, it's easy. Track it back. Track it back to truth. If in tracking it back to the full consciousness of truth, we recognize that we haven't seen life properly, you may have to keep tracking back all the way to mind. It doesn't make any difference. But in truth, one must see, one must be consciously conscious of all of the facts of being, of all of the ideas of being. A lack of health, so to speak, is only a belief that I'm not focused somewhere, that I'm not consciously conscious of one of the ideas of being, one of the ideas of truth, one of the facts of truth. That's all. So when the opportunity comes along and comes knocking at your door, and it may, and it probably will, rejoice. It's okay. Just welcome it and say, great, I have to know that I'm off focus somewhere. I'm going to find out where. I go into the inner sanctum of principle, right, to the inner sanctum, way back to mind, and I know that the mind of mind is my mind, that it's the all-knowing mind, that it is declaring to me everything, that in spirit it has the ability to specify itself so it can very easily order itself to my experience, to this particular moment, to this particular choice, and it will enable me to choose the spiritual, to choose the exact fact that I seem not to be focused on. And in soul, it will identify it for me, it will crystallize it in principle, it will operate it in life, it will give it unique expression, and in truth, it will be found within the whole. Very simple. As you do that spiritually, as you track it back, you are in a state of health. It's simple. the roadmap is here. You just have to follow it. Now, subjectively, my response to doing the little trip that I was just doing, that I've just taken, is to affirm the truth. But to affirm the truth is to affirm every fact in being in its absolute correct value, in its place, to see it expressed in life and to be consciously conscious of it. Affirmation is more than just claiming, affirming. You know, you can, I don't know if any of you have tried this, but you can sit there and affirm that you're healthy till it rains, sleets, snows, and whatever, and in California rarely, or at least not here in LA and San Diego, and won't do a thing. Won't do a thing. You could have a little, you know, mental malpractice going on or a little thought transference or something, but you can demand and claim. But if you don't know what you're affirming in consciousness, if you don't know what it is that you're claiming, if you haven't come out from mind and you haven't gone through the stages where in principle you understand that it's not you that's doing the claiming anyway, it's really principle that is doing its own thing because it's operating. And in life it's expressing itself uniquely in my life, and therefore in truth, well, what more can I do except affirm that which is happening and affirm the very specified idea that is happening in my experience.